Welcome back. Another episode, 308, I think. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Am I right about that? 308?
I
Check.
think you're right.
Okay, 308. Well, this week, I think this is the third indictment. Former President Donald Trump had to travel to Washington, D.C. to plead not guilty in a court to all four charges that he used unlawful means to subvert the results of the 2020 presidential election. I am now going to Washington, D.C. to be arrested for having challenged a corrupt, rigged, stolen election. It's a great honor because I am being arrested for you, Trump wrote on Truth Social. Biden and his family steal millions and millions of dollars, including bribes from foreign countries, and I'm headed to D.C. to be arrested for protesting a crooked election. Unfair venue, unfair judge. We are a nation in decline. MAGA, Trump added. I don't know how many people read Truth Social, but that's what he sent the message on Truth Social. He hasn't got back to Twitter yet for some reason. He is back on Twitter, he just doesn't use it. This is a result of special counsel Jack Smith. He's supposedly an independent counsel, so he's not working with the White House on this. He charged Trump with a conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, obstruction and conspiracy against the right to vote, and to have one's vote counted. In a separate case brought by Smith, Trump faced charges regarding the alleged mishandling of documents after leaving the White House. That's that whole thing with Mar-a-Lago and the raid. And of course, then Georgia, I think there is a prosecutor in there who's considering whether to file charges against Trump and his lawyers and aides over their efforts to expose or to bring attention to what they thought was a fraudulent election in 2020 down there. So what we have here is sort of they're charging Trump for having bad thoughts, and they're impugning or they're inferring all types of evil motives on his part. There really is nothing here to. I saw a highlight of the indictment. I didn't read the entire indictment. I'm not a lawyer. I can't go through that. But from what I read is they admitted. Did you see that Jimmy Dore thing I sent you,
Yes.
where they kind of deconstructed it? And while Jack Smith admits that Trump has a right to voice his concerns over the election and challenge the elections, he turns around and indicts him for doing the very thing. He says this is undermining an election. And there's a thing here. This is Glenn Greenwald, who did that deconstruction I sent you. Jimmy Dore was showing. Says the newest indictment reads exactly like a jointly written monologue by Joe Scarborough, Chris Hayes, Lawrence O'Donnell, and Jen Psaki. It's like Jack Smith randomly borrowed from an MSNBC scripts from over the past 2 years and just mixed it like it was like a resist like a hashtag resistance ad lib, and that's what like Michael Tracy tweeted. Special counsel reveals itself to be an MSNBC monologue with prosecutorial powers. So really what they're saying is just by challenging election, voicing concerns, claims of fraud, that's trying to overturn the election and that's undermining people's right to vote. That's really it, right? That's what I gather from this latest indictment.
Right. Well, I mean, they have all these felony charges, which are buried inside the indictments, but none of them presents any evidence that Trump had felonious awareness of stuff that was in the boxes. So there has to be that. You have to actually be able to say that Trump was aware of bad stuff and he was deliberately doing this. But there hasn't been any of that. So it's kind of mystifying. And I think one of the really interesting parts of it is that Jack Smith, admitted that they, for some reason, failed to turn over all the evidence to Trump's legal team.
Yes.
And this is required by law. And then they claimed they had, but somehow had forgotten that there are other stuff. And so that would be the grounds to just throw this thing out. Typically, the judge that is presiding is a black woman who is famous for having been the most draconian against the January 6th insurrectionists. So she's a political zealot. So you really might get some interesting. It's very possible Trump will be convicted. And this you know, as we have discussed, is theater. They're trying to diminish the self-esteem and kind of thought world of European Americans, heritage Americans, as far as the idea that we have any sort of democratic power. And so, or that we can complain if they just steal election after election, if it becomes like the rubber stamp elections of, you know, third world countries where, you know, the dictator gets 99% every single time he runs, you know. So I think that it's likely that Trump will be elected. I don't know if it's likely, but certainly it's a good chance. But this will be obviously intersecting with the upcoming election. So you're going to have a very amusing situation if Trump is heading toward conclusion at the same moment that Trump is elected, because you could have a kind of situation that existed between the election and January 6th last time, where you really didn't know what was going to happen. It depend on who was going to seize the reins of power and do something, you know, violent or controlling against the opposition. And it just makes American democracy look ridiculous. And so that's why I think we're going to see quite a show here.
Yeah, each indictment boosts Trump in the polls.
Sure.
And there's a reason for that, of course. It's because the Trump, obviously, the indictments are ridiculous. And it just, I guess, boosts, you know, people get upset. They want to support Trump even more. Even puts me in the position of defending Trump, which I don't like doing because it's so ridiculous. Again, to condemn these indictments and to call out the election isn't to endorse the Trump presidency or his candidacy, for that matter. It's just there are a lot of problems with the election. Many people are under the impression that, you know, he's being accused of the January 6th insurrection, but the word insurrection doesn't appear anywhere in the indictment. So, you know, there's nothing, no mention of an attempted coup, the stuff you hear on MSNBC and from politicians. And what he's really being prosecuted for are simply bad thoughts or sort of abstract offenses, which, again, you don't want a prosecutor having the power to prosecute you for abstract things. You want real crimes. I think within a document, he's blamed Trump for creating mistrust in the process, giving false hope. I was like, that's not your position to call that out. I mean, mistrust. Right. Of course, there's mistrust in the process. It's called. Yeah. I mean, it's called. I thought this is part of our democracy, right? Being able to express your mistrust in the system. In fact, there might be something untoward in our elections, in our politics, in our government. Really, Trump created that mistrust. Trump's creating that mistrust. I mean, the Biden family isn't creating mistrust with their blatant corruption. So he's being punished for this. He basically is being punished for not recanting what he claimed. And by the way, you can legally falsely claim election fraud. It's not illegal to do that. It's just, again, it's just obviously. And isn't this, I'm sorry, isn't the indictment election interference? I mean, it's right. He is the leader. He's the leading candidate.
President, yeah. I mean, as the executive branch, it's his responsibility actually to have a say in federal elections. So, I mean, this is just ridiculous. I think the more amusing one is the indictment concerning Stormy Daniels.
Yes,
because that one is, you know, that he paid extortion money to her, but that isn't what's wrong. It's that he incorrectly reported it.
Yes, yeah. Which is just a question of interpretation. Yes.
Right, which of course is like, you know, in other words, here, again, it's all this mind reading of Trump. In that case, he couldn't have given her the money because he was afraid that it would have a personally bad effect on his life. Like his wife might be angry that he was paying off a porn star. But he had to have been in his mind doing it to subvert the election process, because there was just this evidently a legal right for the American public to know that the Donald had paid off the porn star. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is another, I mean, do you really think these are serious charges? That they're not. in my mind, I think that they are theatrical charges. They're
well,
just
isn't questioning legitimacy of election as old as elections themselves? It's isn't that part of the process almost?
Of course. What is a democracy if you can't challenge the election? I mean, my God, it's like, does it divine order? I mean, how do the votes get counted? This is the most fundamental thing in the world for a democracy to question. So it's, I think my contention that this is not real is.
Well, remember the resistance when Trump was elected? I'm part of the resistance. Is that denying the election by declaring your resistance to the
president
Trump who's inaugurated? Oh, but all the politicians and celebrities who openly called for the Electoral College to switch their votes to undermine the election. I mean, jeez.
There's already been one very amusing kind of tangent that came out of this. And I think this is correct. I don't want to, you know, I haven't actually heard the audio tape, but this comes from a very good source that Donald made the statement concerning Jack Smith that he wondered what his name was before he changed it. I'm serious, that Trump evidently tweeted this. And there's been a bunch of, you know, enraged, you know.
What does that mean? Is this again another example that the guilty fleeth and none pursueth?
Right. I just don't know. But anyway, so you can see where this could really, you know, lead into the theater of the absurd fairly quickly.
There's another case they're trying to make Trump's make the case of Trump as a closet anti-Semite.
You know, I think that is correct, and the response that was going around today that I was reading, they were referring to the fact that his name had originally been Drumpf, and then they were, you know, asking him to, you know, make some kind of a statement concerning that, you know, because otherwise he was a dangerous anti-Semite. So that's, I mean, this doesn't help the country much. Certainly isn't going to help the election process become more coherent, or more observable. You know, create more confidence in the American people in it. But it is just going to create an enormous stink bomb, which, if they are conducting it the way I believe they are, this will come as the election becomes near. It will get more intense.
Well, they're criminalizing political opposition. They're criminalizing a particular political movement. They've thrown more than 1,000 people in jail for the January 6th thing. You know, that the feds created. They spun a narrative which was completely false, and they put people in jail for it. They ruined people's lives just to, again, to score political points. And so that's how ruthless these people are. And so Trump is just one of many victims here. You know, there are a lot of people who don't have the resources to fight these charges legally. Their lives are being ruined, materially being ruined, by being thrown in jail for trespassing, or being let in and then being charged with trespassing and then being told that they're insurrectionists. And then in many of these defendants were forced to recant in court their political views on the election, which is absurd.
See, this is my point. Trump is just another one of the 1-6 insurrectionists. Obviously, he's just the best known. He's getting the most publicity, but they're all, as a collection, they are psychological props to make heritage Americans lose the belief that they can complain about a corrupt political system.
Yeah, do you think that Trump was running the show when he was president? It was Trump's FBI that had infiltrated the January 6th protesters.
Right.
Yeah, and conspiring against them. Yeah, did you see a thing that I think they were debating or discussing this, the latest indictments on MSNBC? And of course, they have that genius Al Sharpton on as a political commentator for some reason.
No, they have Al Sharpton on.
Yeah, and he was talking about the indictment. Sharpton made the claim that he said he was reading through the indictment. He was just amazed by it. Yeah, right. I'm sure he was reading through the indictment. But he said he was amazed at all the charges that were levied against the former president. This is a sitting president. He said, can you imagine me, that generation two from now, our grandchildren be reading about American history and learn about the criminal president Donald Trump tried to overthrow the government? And he went on to say, can you imagine our reading that James Madison and Thomas Jefferson tried to overthrow the government so they could stay in power? That's what we're looking at. We're looking at American history. Yeah. And it will play out. We're going very important. There was something called the American Revolutionary War, the Declaration of Independence, and of course, both of those men were members of the founding generation who overthrew the British government in the United States. So I thought that was funny. Is that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as they would interpret reality, the promotion of the original, the founding fathers, is illegal because they were all insurrectionists, and promoting them could be very well dog whistling for another, revolution. So they could take their logic to that extreme place.
And of course, if you're in another country and the CIA or National Endowment for Democracy, or some NGO supports an insurrection there to overthrow a government that the U.S. government doesn't like, that's okay. So it just wasn't an approved insurrection, I guess. Again, insurrection which no one had any guns or was armed, and they just kind of ran through the building, did very little damage actually. Most of the ruckus was outside. In fact, to the extent they're inside, it was pretty orderly for the most
Damage
part.
is all done by the agents.
I
I mean,
think
the
one of the
actual.
protesters, they asked him, "Hey, where's Mitch McConnell's office?" And they told him where it was. The
Yeah,
police
I mean,
did.
I have not seen any damage that was done by someone who's being charged. I mean, where is the people who broke the windows or whatever damage they're claiming? I just haven't seen any charges linked to this. So it's the whole thing is ridiculous. It's just it isn't it's just done to make us feel impotent and weak, and we need to remember that, and to have the right response is to be energized and enraged, and have that propel us into making the very best political system we can around us, right, to make our local areas strong, and then to just keep banging the drum on the independent media to make sure that as many people as possible, the unvaccinated, to use an expression, are aware that we're being attacked. Now, federal government is obviously illegitimate. It's a secret society. It's made up of individuals from a secret society, and it has a genocide in mind right now.
Speaking of genocide, in South Africa, thousands of black South Africans in a stadium, tens of thousands, chanted, "Kill the whites, kill the farmer, kill the Boer," at a massive event. This was I think a rally for the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, I think. It was a spinoff of the African National Congress. Julius Malema is the leader, and he led the crowd chanting, "Kill the Boer, kill the farmers." This is a slogan that's been around for a couple of decades, I think, at least. Started in the 90, actually more, almost 3 decades. Started in the 1990s. Of course, the purpose of these is to call for the murder. Is supposedly to right the wrongs of the past in South Africa. Of course, committing more wrongs in the present or future, I don't know how it solves the problem. But nevertheless, you had this chant of this character, Julius Malema, who was obviously a deranged anti-white radical who's unfortunately well within the political mainstream of South Africa. He was purged from the ANC a couple of years, or I think a few years ago for this, but he has his political party. I think it was the third largest party in South Africa. This led Elon Musk to respond. He, of course, Elon Musk is a South African native. And he tweet he I think sent a tweet out to the current president, Cyril Ramaphosa. He says, "They are openly pushing for genocide of white people in South Africa." Musk wrote, "Cyril Ramaphosa, why do you say nothing?" Again, the South Africa itself, I think some 60 million people, and the government is thoroughly corrupt and incompetent. The nation is collapsing on infrastructure collapse, power grid failing. They're rationing water now. This used to be a first world country. Now it's collapsing. I think South Africans are being advised to have at least 72 hours of food, water on hand, and some of the rolling blackouts are lasting 12 hours or longer, which is leading to even more chaos. The whole thing of kill the Boer shouldn't make light of it, because that this has been happening with the white South African farmers. So they've been massacred. for, I think, has this been going on for several decades? And so it's a real threat. And of course, as the situation gets more desperate in South Africa, there's every reason to believe that there could be a genocide in South Africa.
Yeah, someone sent me a video of the event, and I clicked on it, and I actually didn't know what it was. And for the first 30 seconds, I thought I was watching the MTV award show. And I was, what is this? You know, and then I read the description. I realized, you know, wait a second. What can you say but get out? I just can't imagine. You know, it's funny because we were talking before we started recording. They had the riot in Union Square in Manhattan, I think yesterday, the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was completely spontaneous. This streamer, you know, kind of illiterate black kid streamer. He said he was going to give away free stuff. And a couple thousand kids came and they just rioted. They just, you know, beat people up and smash cars and stuff. And the point is that there wasn't any motivation for this. This was just what they were doing for fun. I mean, they're all welfare state children, you know, because they aren't really mentally anyway adults. And so they have free time and they have this tradition of hatred that all of their problems, whichever problems there are, frankly, you know, or were caused by racism and slavery and things like this. And so it was pretty much, you know, a parallel to what was going on in that that concert, I guess it was, in South Africa, you know, where the justification of violence was this idea of things that had happened in the past. And in both cases, the cultures are being manipulated to produce this. I mean, obviously it's the case in here in the United States in New York City. And so you can be sure, because this is a culturally controlled process, that this is just going to get worse and worse and worse. I mean, if you think about South Africa, obviously killing a few Boers is just going to make more Boers leave. And that is not going to help the food situation in South Africa any. In Manhattan, you know, that situation is, you know, parallel to the things that are going on in San Francisco, you know, Portland, all these other Soros DA zones. And so they will just drive out more and more of the productive class, and you're going to end up with a greater concentration of these individuals. They will be in political control, and they are being trained for violence. So what can you say to the people in South Africa and the people in Manhattan except get out?
Yeah, the narrative that people have about South Africa is that whites went in there and dispossessed or enslaved the blacks and stole land. Of course, the history is quite different than that. The white settlers, the Dutch, German, Dutch, English, went there in the late 17th century and sort of carved out the country, developed the land. There weren't many there. The Bushmen had been wiped out by the Zulus. And they eventually bumped into the Zulus, but they weren't Zulus. These were hunter gatherers there. That whereas the settlers were farmers. So that there's no dispossession of farmland that needs to be compensated for. They made the farms. They developed the country, the infrastructure. The extent that it was a modern country, first world country, was through the efforts, labor, ingenuity, and intelligence of the white settlers there. In fact, most of the Boer are more indigenous to the area than the current blacks that are there, who emigrated in the ensuing decades as the country developed. So again, it's almost a complete reverse. There was an article.
Look, the Boers did not strip the land.
No, they made it
of the resources. That was the Rothschild family.
Well, that was the mining interest that picked in the 19th century. Yeah.
How the resource it's Cecil Rhodes, the Churchills, and the Rothschild family are the ones it was this, you know, can you imagine them, you know, if the crowd was screaming, you know, kill the Rothschilds, kill the Churchills. I mean, it would have had a whole different, you know, tone to it.
Well, yeah. Well, what if there's, what if there, you know, if you had a white person saying kill the Jews?
Well, exactly. Yeah. But the point is, that the individuals who are, you know, with the chant are completely deluded. They've been given, they're under cultural control. They're under cultural control. And they don't know about that. They don't do the necessary research to have a really clear understanding of.
Well, they think they deserve free stuff, like those kids in Central Park.
Right. You give them a false history, which creates sets them up as victims. You make a false European perpetrator of the evil, and then you also wreck the economy, right, so that they can't actually produce anything. Now, what is that a formula for, right? It's a formula for race violence, and this is what has been done.
Well, that was going to happen in South Africa the moment they set up a unitary state, Rainbow State, you know, in the 1990s. They should have set up a separate white homeland and separated. And brother, most of the violence isn't black on white, although that does happen. It's ethnic violence between the black tribes.
Of course, it's just, believe me, if you took Manhattan and kind of made a South African game board out of it, it would be such a close parallel to what's going on. There's just so much of the same playbook in operation. And in both cases, the blacks are the victims, but they're not victims in the way that they understand. They are victims of another group that has come in, stripped the resources, enslaved them, and is now, developed the cult of victimhood, which paralyzes them and makes them intellectually impotent. And then given them, here's the enemy. He's right next to you.
The narrative. There was an article in the Washington Post about this, but Elon Musk raises the specter of white genocide as if it's some sort of, you know, a conspiracy theory, some deluded conspiracy theory, as if there isn't evidence for it. When you have a stadium of 90,000 people chanting kill the Boer and the representative of the third major political party of the country, it's a real threat, especially the fact that it is going on. So there are real consequences for that, for that rhetoric. But there's an article in the Washington Post that said that explaining sort of the resentment that the Julius Malema's party has. And this guy, Ishan Tharoor, the Washington Post, he writes, close to three quarters of the private farmland in South Africa is white owned, and some advocates for land reform view redistribution as a fundamental part of dismantling the legacy of apartheid, which was built on the legal dispossession of the nation's black majority. The ANC, for its part, has said it doesn't want to repeat the economic turmoil that followed expropriation of white land in neighboring Zimbabwe. We can talk about what happened in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe went from the breadbasket of Africa, to a basket case under these policies. And the same thing's, of course, happening in South Africa. Of course, there's a lot wrong with that. The most obvious point is that in South Africa, there were no farms when only blacks lived there. Again, they didn't farm the land. There were only farms in the white settlers created the farms. They had agriculture to the area. They didn't confiscate any farms.
Did they get anything to do with the fact that the whites have three quarters of the farmland?
Yes. Mean, yeah. Well, they're the class that farms.
It's where they live. Yes. They live in the farms and they created the farms.
But listen, if you destroy the farmers, the food's not going to grow itself. They discovered this in Zimbabwe. And the nation's 60 million people, they're going to starve to death. You know, Zimbabwe now has to get food relief imported because they destroyed the farms there for retribution, perceived grievance of the past. Like I said, most of the black people in South Africa emigrated there. The Dutch settlers actually have more of a claim than most of the blacks that live there. They were brought in for cheap labor. The Indians were brought in for cheap labor. So that the state was made multicultural for the interest of capital. That's something we're seeing today in the United States and throughout the West. Multiculturalism is being pushed for the interest of big capital to exploit the country and also to break down any sense of ethnic identity. One thing that the apartheid state did was it represented the Afrikaner. It was a national state. That's one thing that these big businessmen don't like. One thing I do find interesting is that, you know, is that there is a very wealthy Jewish community, or there are communities in South Africa that go unassailed or unbothered by Julius Malema's party. In fact, he says he condemns anti-Semitism. You know, because his party, or at least his former party, ANC, was bankrolled by Jews.
Of course. I mean, Tim, someone is controlling the cultural narrative. And that group is going to make sure they're protected. I mean, these people, I actually know people from South Africa who are Jewish, and they had very privileged lives. You know, they were the political power, you know, just in making small talk with them. And so it's easy to understand just how the cultural controls operate in South Africa. And they're clearly in place, because otherwise the, you know, they would be exploring their history with a little more objectivity. You know, if it's so important, they would be putting a little more energy into seeing what was really their history.
Yeah. Well, I said, given the current turmoil, and given the level of violence and societal collapse that's being witnessed in South Africa, isn't that a vindication of the late apartheid system, all things considered? I mean, is there any other way? It was originally created because the Boer knew, given demographics, the only way to preserve the Boer culture was to separate. And what they had, they built. So what was so wrong with separation and control? Now, I would say there's some policy, because one thing is you had hunger for cheap labor, which undermined them, which is, again, they're their own worst enemy, to the extent that they brought in cheap labor because they didn't want to pay higher wages. But the whole point is to defend that culture, which is centuries old. And to the extent that we know of South Africa, if its infrastructure as nation state, it's a white nation state that was created. You know, it is what it is. And given all the complexities and factors, what else can you do? Because if you do away with separation, you go away. You're swamped. You're overwhelmed.
Well, it doesn't lead to the workers' paradise that the cultural controllers who are creating the integration claim.
No.
I mean, I can give you absolute assurances on that, Tim, because they've tried it, or they haven't tried it, but they have executed this plan over 100 times, and it always leads to violence and catastrophe every single time. Every single workers' paradise that, you know, involves multiculturalism, mass immigration, and of course, more and more narrowly focused political control, because you need to have that. You need a Politburo, or, you know, an EU, the Brussels conference group. I mean, you need some kind of controlling group that has all this power. And then what happens? Oh my God, the plan just doesn't work, and everybody just gets genocided. It's just terrible. I mean, you know, how many?
Well, here's the thing. Here's what my point is apartheid. Okay. There was nothing more necessary to be against apartheid in the 1980s because it was racist. There's nothing worse than being a racist, we're told, whatever that means. But in 1994, when the African National Congress inherited what was the strongest economy in Africa, with a well-preserved, well-maintained, advanced infrastructure, reliable electricity, clean and running water, here we are almost 30 years later, they've wrecked it all. Now there's just constant blackouts. The railway system is crumbling. The cities are dysfunctional, exploding crime. There's no water to be had, clean water to be had anymore. Sewage running in the streets, supposedly. The South African Airways, which was once a functional, profitable airline, is bankrupt. The economy is absolutely crippled. There's poverty, misery everywhere. Unemployment is 43%. And so all that is worth it, because now they have what they call a democracy with one party rule, with their political leaders live in mansions where everyone starves to death, because they do the bidding of cosmopolitan Jewish capital. That's the situation in Africa. Whereas prior to that, you had an apartheid system where the country was functional, people were being fed, there was work to be had, living standards were going up, but it didn't worship at the altar of a unitary democratic system rainbow multicultural system. But the only problem is a multicultural system, given the realities of South Africa, that area, would destroy the modern civilization that was there and make everyone's life miserable and result in mass death and genocide. So congratulations, you did away with racism in South Africa, but now you have ethnic warfare, genocide, mass starvation. Congratulations. You're welcome. Politics should be about what is and what's possible, not some fantasy idea or some idea, unachievable ideal. And often those things are put up just to actually to achieve the exact opposite, to exploit and to impose tyranny on people with rhetoric, with slogans.
There's no doubt in my mind that South Africa was left in the state it was with the intent it would fail. They knew it when they pulled out, when the Masonic British left. I mean,
well, the ANC is a perfect government for plunder, because they're corrupt. You buy them off and you steal the country's resources.
You know, the parallel I would give to South Africa is the CFA franc. You know, the French monetary, technique, where they're able to basically keep colonialism in place through mind control, because they control the paper currency that goes mm-hmm. through. And then they siphon off money every time that, you know, the currency needs to go through the banking system. I was reading this analysis that those nations have like some kind of, like, I don't know, like 200 tons of gold that they've produced in the last 20 years. None of these current countries have any gold reserves at all.
Oh, by the way, South Africa had a gold-backed, the rand, of course.
Yeah, the Kugerrand, yeah.
The Kugerrand. And by the way, that was held by the South African state.
Well, of course.
For the South African people.
Yeah, so see there, if you look at the CFA franc, you can see kind of the mind control that mm-hmm. that is still in place. You know, the Masonic French, they, you know, we left, you know, gee, go ahead, have democracy. Perfectly well that these nations would always fail, because really what it really amounts to is a very extreme kind of, I would compare it to compound interest, you know, that they basically take a piece of every single transaction that uses their currency. So they can never get ahead. And the French, of course, knew the misery and the hundreds of millions of lives that would be lost with this process and have been, and they could care less.
Yep.
The Masonic, satanic, you know, psychopaths that run these things. And they left South Africa in an absolute shambles, knowing it couldn't succeed. And of course, now here we are, where the people, the deluded individuals in the stadium are chanting, kill the Boers. They should be chanting, kill the Masons. You know, this is the problem. Same problem in going on in the Ukraine. Exact same problem. They, you know, the Bolsheviks left the Ukraine as a bear trap.
Well, here's
some would step in, you know, because you couldn't combine the Russians and the Ukrainian speaking people. It wasn't going to work.
What we're seeing here is ugly racial ethnic politics, right? And yeah. So in South Africa, whichever situation, you had the white minority government there. Given the demographics, in order for that white culture, the Afrikaner or South African culture, to survive, it had to create restrictions and separation, apartheid, if you will, and carve out, basically separate and also restrict the freedoms and privileges of certain of the blacks in order to preserve the rights of the whites, but given the demographics. Because if power shifted and blacks were given free rein, you'd get violence and you get what you have today. That's just a reality of the situation in South Africa. And it's a situation where if blacks weren't in South Africa, the black tribes, various tribes, weren't, respectful or maybe perhaps fearful of the white government, you'd get anarchy, which you have today, because that's the only thing holding it back. Sort of the brutality that we see, the primitivism, the necklacing, and these things that's so common in South Africa, this tribal violence, intertribal violence, ethnic violence that we see. We saw in 2021 with the rioting. It's if they're not held back by anything, this is what you get. Basically, if the white dominant white culture isn't there to impose their standards on these people, you get the sort of the anarchy, the brutalism that we're seeing now, and also societal collapse, because to the extent society functioned the way it did up until the 1990s, it was an artifact, a product of white culture, white European culture, the Dutch, the British, that went down there, and everyone else has come along for the ride. And they, you know, but the moment that white culture is now dethroned or seen as being illegitimate and having no moral authority or political authority or power to defend itself, it collapses. And it's not as if the blacks step up or they step in and they just inherit these institutions and everything functions. It just collapses. And we see the same thing in the West. We see the same things in cities in the United States that become, whether it's Detroit or Jackson, Mississippi, or Baltimore, Maryland, you know, it just collapses because they simply have demonstrated they have not demonstrated any capacity to run a state, much less a municipality, because it becomes corrupt and incompetent. And so what we're seeing here is once white culture, European, whether it be an American or European, is illegitimized and dethroned, its institutions collapse and crumble, and so does the society. You know, the sophisticated society, high standard of living goes away with it too, because it's all a product of that. Yeah, and of so, if non-whites, blacks, aren't expected to adopt that culture and live that culture, then the society that they have won't have those accoutrements or those attributes or artifacts or buildings and infrastructure that characterizes European culture. Other cultures, non-white cultures, successfully incorporated European techniques, like East Asian cultures did that very well. They have an amazing absorb and imitate processes and apply them to Asian circumstances and do very well. Chinese, Japanese, we see that, but we haven't seen that in Africa. The narrative isn't there because you have the sense of grievance that you have in South Africa. You have the sense of grievance that's been nurtured and agitated here in the United States. So when they achieve political power or given political power, because there's always someone giving them political power, we know the hand behind that is they see it as an opportunity to plunder and to get what they want, and then the system collapses. And again, you see that's why the cities like Jackson, Mississippi, or Detroit, or Baltimore just collapse.
Tim, South Africa is really fascinating to me. I've spent a lot of time just kind of staring at the thing in amazement. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so amazing that they've been able to get the blacks to hate the Boers, who sit there and work their farms and produce food. Most of it ends up in South Africa, incidentally. Mm-hmm. Export that much. So most of it ends up feeding these people.
Yes.
Well, at the exact same time, De Beers, right, is taking all of the minerals, the gold, the diamonds, the tungsten, all of the minerals are being stripped out of the country and shipped overseas. I mean, De Beers, I think it wasn't until like 10 years ago that they had the same board. They had J.P. Morgan, Oppenheimer, and the thing was started by Cecil Rhodes, right? Yeah. In the Rothschild family, for God's sakes. I mean, how is it that that company could stay in effect, stealing the entire time the resources of the nation?
Well, who think paid for Jewish Malema's mansion?
Well, there you go. Yeah. So there's South
Africa. And by the way, kill the Boer. Is a much more attractive slogan than trying to explain the complexities and the irregularities and corruption of international finance. here in the United States, right, when you have like, here's a situation, like I mentioned to you that recently the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, he's actually worse than Lori Lightfoot, if you can believe that.
He's incredible.
There's this thing in Chicago called a teen takeover. These are teens. This isn't like this isn't Jughead and Archie from the Archies. T- Basically, these are black kids, black youths, teenagers. They call them teen takers, but they're black. Black. Look, watch, but they're all black. And of course, these takeovers are characterized by looting, property damage, blocking traffic, and just causing mayhem and chaos in the streets. And there was a press conference about this. Someone called it a mob, and he said that was the Brandon Johnson said it's inappropriate to call it a mob. It's a large gathering.
Yeah,
and he just accepts the level of crime, and there's an acceptance of, or the fact that how many times have blacks just written off? They just ignore the consequences or the sort of the sheer reality of black and white crime. How many muggings? How many rapes? How many murders? How much fear have black, you know, blacks? Have they chased the whites out when whites, the white flight? What were whites fleeing from? You know, it wasn't because they just didn't like the color of people's skin. There's behavior. They in the situation, the cities became untenable with large black populations. So some acknowledgement here of your collective responsibility for this. But the idea is that black and white crime just isn't a consideration. They don't think it matters. And they, to them, it's killing whitey. So when you have like kill the boar, kill whitey, and you have all this stuff being taught in history, how, you know, whites have oppressed blacks and they're guilty of this and guilty of that, and there's no responsibility on their part for anything for their lives. You get this. And not to mention, you have the police stand down. There was a bill, I think this was in your part of the world. Yeah, a law. This was California State House. Is considering a bill that would take race into consideration when sentencing criminals. It would rectify racial bias and reduce disparate impact on the justice system. Basically, it would take into account racism when you're sentencing someone of color for a crime that they've been convicted for, and so you give them lighter sentencing. But they're citing disparate impact. Well, whenever you have laws against property damage, theft, murder, rape, car theft, all that, it's going to have a disparate impact on blacks because blacks commit more crime. They commit more of those crimes. But they're saying that's racism. You know, so they want lighter. You see, the idea is they don't care that people are being victimized or property or their own, you know, they're being raped or murdered they're being mugged. To them, that's just white folk, or maybe many times Asians. You know, but what matters more is their own is how many blacks are being put in the jail, regardless of the fact that they're guilty of the crime they're committing. And then this acceptance or tolerance of high crime in these areas. Now, what right now the demographics are different in the United States, but this sort of contempt for white people demonstrated by these black politicians. What if they were 80% of the population in the United States? You know,
move.
Yeah, you'd have chanting rhetoric like kill whitey, just like hearing kill the boar, because sure. It's the same attitude.
I mean, the fact is that the blacks have been victimized. They just don't understand how. The Great Society programs and the rap culture were created to debase them, to take them from a culture that was on the uptick in the late 50s and early 60s and to today, where you have the baby daddy, mm-hmm. where you have mobs of kids running, you know, in the middle of the day, just smashing cars. I mean, they are really, I mean, if you think about, you know, I mean, John Stewart would call them children, of course, you know, these yes. are children, even if they have an automatic weapon. But the fact is they are truly victims. They are just double victims because they have no idea how they were debased. And that's really I think that's as much of a tragedy as any of their behavior.
Well, the response to that, and this is a consequence of that, of course, the Great Society and these things, the breakdown of the family, the lack of, it's also the inability of the broader white, dominant white culture to impose standards on them. To expect exactly. them to live up, you know, the idea was you do away with segregation, you pass civil rights laws, and the expectation is that white people act like black. I'm sorry, emancipated black people would act like white middle
them
class,
or encourage them to intellectual development.
Yeah, but that wasn't the
Where
racial
is
narrative.
That?
The problem is the racial narrative of the civil rights wasn't that. The racial narrative of civil rights is you are a victim. You deserve compensation. Not like now you have to work. And they expected a great leap forward. No, because again, the idea is the segregation and the restrictions that were imposed upon them. Yeah, it restricted them, but it was also, it wasn't a cause of their differences, their inequality. It was also a response to differences in inequality. Okay, and that's just a reality. They're different. People have their group differences. You can't expect to solve the problems by throwing them all together or blaming one side for all the problems. There's always been a, there's, you know, the moment that blacks were introduced in the country with slavery, you had a, you know, you had a helot population that was going to be very difficult to assimilate. It was going to be a problem. And so it is a problem. Ignoring those problems don't make this go away, nor does spinning a narrative of white guilt, where every descendant of whites are expected to be take a supine position of a penitent, begging for forgiveness and writing a check, for reparations for whatever. And that's the attitude. That's why you have these, you have that. But the inability to oppose the standards invites contempt, and what happens is the group that you're, you know, they're reverting back to primitive ways if they don't expect to live. I'm not saying they don't have the capacity to improve and live up to those standards, but they're certainly not expected to, especially with today's rhetoric. Well, black crime and black dysfunction is written off either as being nothing to worry about or a product of bad whitey doing it to them.
Right. And the double problem, as if things can't get any worse, is that in 1959, we were able to inspire them. European or heritage America culture was inspirational to blacks. They wanted to be part of the middle class. They wanted their piece of that. This isn't what's going on now.
No.
This is supersession. They want to dominate, but just like the blacks in South Africa, they don't have the internal, kind of intellectual structures to succeed, even if they were in, as they are in many cases, being given the political power.
Well, here's the thing. Remember, at the
giving them the political power is just going to make things worse. Now, my point here is that in 1959, it was a high trust culture. There was some trust, an intellectual trust between blacks and whites. That's gone now. We are a low trust culture.
You had a white population, which is close to 90% of the country.
Well, for sure. But my point is that now you have blacks like the mayor of Chicago defending the current level of behavior. He's not trying to be inspired, not trying to see a better, path for his people. He's saying, as we are is good enough. And you just have to put up with it, or you're being racist. Now that's how you debase a whole city, and that's really what's going on now, is that the mayors, in blacks and whites, because you have lots of woke, Pete Buttigieg types that are, just as much authoritarian personality as, or even more so than Lori Lightfoot, So it's a there's all we can do is expose that there is malevolence here against blacks that's going on from the people that are encouraging them to, act out and try to organize, like an exodus from these places.
Remember a few years ago, the National Museum of African American History and Culture, they had a plaque there that described the aspects and assumptions of white culture, whiteness in the United States. And among those were rugged individualism, family structure, nuclear family, mother, father, emphasis on scientific method. That would be like
that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Protestant work ethic, time awareness, aesthetics, justice system, competition, communication. This has been using English, avoid conflict, don't show emotion, as in control your emotion, don't go oogity boogity and shake your ass, that sort of thing. Be polite. That made the public space livable. These things, this type of culture creates a modern city like Johannesburg. It creates these cities that are functional. When you don't have these things, the cities become dysfunctional, and they crumble, and they return to the jungle, which is what is happening in South Africa. And so the point is that these are the attributes that make a modern civilization possible. So the point, if you want to have the accoutrements or luxuries or benefits of a modern civilization, you have to behave that way. The problem is their thinking is they don't have to behave that way because that's white culture. Well, there's consequences for that. It's, you will live like a primitive then. You will revert back to that. That's the way it is. The point is South Africa was a white achievement. Dutch, English, that was when they built that nation, and the other people were along for the ride, and they eventually swamped it for different reasons that we talked about: interest of capital, cheap labor, and these things, the narrative of the civil rights movement, decolonization, although the Afrikaners would see themselves as fighting colonization because of the Boer War and all that. So it's much more complicated than that. And so that happened. And same thing in the United States, where, again, the idea is just you give the blacks the vote, you give them certain level positions in government, and all is going to fine. No, it's not. It goes after leaving the Voting Rights Act, the blacks, all it did was give them a free ticket for mass voter fraud just with blacks. That's how most black votes are counted, with ballot harvesting. It's all corrupt. That's why the black vote's 95% Democrat, because most of those votes are just harvested. You know, it's a complete corruption. And that's been going on for decades, you know. So, you know, it is what it is. It's kind of like, there's consequences to how you live. That's what culture is, a way you cope with your reality, the environment around you. And there are better ways to do it, and there are bad ways to do it. And the European way of doing, the Occidental way of doing, is better. And many people
The European way of doing it, like you say, it basically built what can be called the European mimic, which is industrial South Africa. The farms are all developed with European farming techniques by Europeans. All of the railroads, the high rises, the economic infrastructure, financialization, all that stuff is European. Okay, basically this is what happens with colonialization. You get that culture imposed. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea that you can simply leave the artifacts of the culture and give political power to this group with no real training is just, of course, ridiculous, and it's just going to lead to chaos. Moreover, when you give them false ideas about history,
yes,
when you steal from them, when you continue like France and De Beers continues to steal the minerals and the wealth that these nations should have to try to help them develop, well, what do you think is going to happen? You know, this is what you're looking at is, a, in my opinion, as clear as a bell, this is just the fruits of the workers' paradise that was given to the blacks in South Africa by people who knew fully well you were going to get to where you are now, that South Africa would eventually collapse. And now let's see, you know, what will happen. All I can say is that it's going to be violent and chaotic. And the poor Boers that are still living there, you know, they cling to the farms because they've been there for generations. But unfortunately, take a lesson from, San Francisco. Things are going to get worse. Mm-hmm. Things are going to get worse. So we need to, people who want to have basically what is called middle class nonviolent lives need to resegregate now everywhere, because the Masonic project is just in one instance after another is taking urban centers and vulnerable countries and just turning them into hellholes.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
You know, so. I mean, look, you know, I just wanted to mention, you know, just, I know it's a digression, but, you know, I was listening to the stats on the Ukrainian war. I don't know why I do this. I just torture myself with it. But 46,000 Ukrainians died in the last 65 days, the so-called spring offensive.
I hear like 500,000 is the death toll. About 10 million have left the country.
And 10 million left the country. And now, once again, Europeans are walking into automatic weapon fire. And the press does nothing about it. The press just talks about, well, they have to change their tactics. They're literally running these Ukrainians into these fortified positions, which are just like super World War I trench warfare. In other words, with modern, kind of 35 millimeter cannons, and they're just slaughtering them, drones blowing these poor people up. And this is going on right now, this genocide of an entire people. Last week, one of the Ukrainian Masonic devils made the statement that probably 90% of the Ukrainian male population will need to participate in the war, 90%, and mentioned that this could be a 10-year project, right? They're setting us up. They're normalizing genocide. My point here is that there was absolutely no military strategic reason to run these 46,000 people who got killed in the last 60 days into that automatic weapon fire. They had no hope whatsoever of gaining, a meter of ground. And so this was, the rationale is, well, they needed to do it to show the West that they were spry and they were going to like take on the Russians. I mean, this is just the weakest cover story imaginable. It was the whole thing was done just to reduce population. Mm-hmm. It's another example of the Masonic, Judeo-Masonic influence that is controlling these things and is trying to reduce population. And man, if I, I don't know, what do you think, Jim? I mean, do you think the Boers can last? I mean, I think it's pretty clear that things are going to spiral out of control here pretty quick.
I'm surprised NR is still there. I would hightail out of there in the 90s.
You're bound to have hunger here pretty quick. And that's usually the kickoff for the end game. I mean, they got to get out now while they can.
Yeah. And, it's, why endure?
Don't stick around to the last quarter. You don't want to watch this one because, it's just, you look at the people, the quality of the people, like in Manhattan. I was looking at the videos of this, the crowd, and it was middle of the afternoon, mostly males, almost all blacks. And it's the middle of the day. I mean, these are young men. I mean, no employment, no school. They're just hanging out. And to be provoked into just senseless violence and destruction of property for nothing, just as though this is just a fun stuff to do.
Yeah.
That's kind of the last rung, isn't it, before chaos? I mean, once your personality gets to that point, and remember, culture's always moving. There's always momentum. They're headed someplace.
What's odd is the psychology, particularly of a black mob, is sort of to steal and to break things just for fun.
Yeah.
You see that, and,
And then you're going to have vigilante violence, will pop up naturally, and then now you're off to the races. I know I'm kind of a scratchy record, but just, you have to just make an honest appraisal of your situation. If you're in one of these zones, black or white, if you're listening to our show, what's up. Pack your bags, find a way, and find some place that is has a defensible democracy where you can get a sheriff that's actually interested in keeping order, defending private property, reducing violence. If you're not in a place like that, start thinking.
Well, that's probably something that's in America's future as the system. Yeah. The current system just lacks all legitimacy. You're going to have some sort of a national divorce where the country sort of breaks down into regions.
It's already happening. There's already, people I talk to, a lot of them, were like in the Soros zones, and now they're leaving. They've been there for generations. And they have to get out. They're moving out to the suburbs of all things.
Yeah. Suburbs. So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, thanks for the talk, and we'll get them next week, brother.